Did you ever find yourself making a list of reasons to stay and reasons to go? Likely, if you're in a relationship with somebody that's a Jekyll or Hyde, or that they're in or you're out, or you don't know if you're coming or going, you've made a list like this. And maybe other people have advised you to make the list like this. On the one hand, these are all the great things about the relationship. And you would say, hey, when it's good, it's really good. And so you list out all the things that are really good. But Heidi, when it is bad, it is a shit show. And on the other side, you list out all the reasons to go. Now, most of the time, we can look at that list and logically, we can be like, oh man, this bad is definitely outweighing the good, right? Or this good is outweighing the bad. But when you're confused and you're in a position of paralysis, it's usually because the things on your reasons to go list are things you're believing you can somehow change. You're looking at that list and you're thinking they're disrespectful, they're unkind, they have a drinking problem, all the different things. But then you go, well, if I love them enough, maybe we can change that and put it over here on the other side. If I just stick with them long enough, maybe some of these things, reasons to go, will change. And what happens is you believe that, and then you go back into the relationship, and unfortunately, it doesn't change. And then you start to feel like you cannot trust your own judgment. There's a couple of reasons you feel like you can't trust your judgment. The first reason is because you're being gaslit out of your judgment. All right. Somebody's coming to you and they're like, they're an alcoholic or they're an addict, and they're saying to you, or they have a drinking problem or substance use disorder, and they're saying to you, well, I know you thought you saw this, but you didn't see what you thought you saw. And you're like, but I know I saw it. You actually had like, I, you had a beer can in your hand, or I pulled the beer out of the trash. Like I saw, well, I don't know what to tell you. I don't know how it got there. And they say it with such conviction that you're like, am I nuts? I mean, or maybe it's not something you physically saw. Maybe it's something you feel. And so you go to your partner who's being toxic, addicted, dysfunctional, cray cray, and you say, look, I feel really anxious all the time. Like, I don't know what's going to happen, if you're going to be sober or not. I feel like I have to be on guard all the time. I feel like I have to like watch out constantly. And then the alcoholic or addict says to you, well, you shouldn't be doing that. This is my problem, not your problem. You shouldn't be worried about what I'm going to do and what I'm not going to do. You should be living your life. And there's a part of you inside that rings true. And you're like, well, wait a minute. I should just be focusing on myself. But that is a mind effery, because the truth is, how are you able to do that? How are you able to focus on yourself when there's a real bomb going off? And it's like the addict or alcoholic's going, well, look, I know there's like a bomb in the middle of the room and it's ticking and it can go off at any minute, but don't, that's not your problem. Well, it kind of is my problem. Okay. Especially if I have kids in the house, if I had things I want to protect. So, they'll say, well, you shouldn't feel what you feel. They'll tell you, you didn't see what you saw. This is the first one, right? You didn't see what you saw. And you're like, I must be crazy, because I definitely saw that, or I saw a text that if, especially if you're dealing with love addiction or sex addiction, or, some form of addiction that encompasses a cheating element to it. And then you see a text that's sent to somebody or a message, and they'll say, well, you didn't, it's not what you think it was, which is another version of you didn't see what you saw. Okay. And it goes like this. Well, that's not what you think it is. I know what you think it is, but that's what you're seeing isn't the reality of what it is. That's my cousin. That's a friend of a friend. That's a person who's down and out on her luck. And I'm just trying to help her out. I was trying to be a kind person. And now you're making me out to be a pervert or a weirdo, but I was really just trying to help this person. I mean, they say the craziest things. And because a part of you wants to believe it, well, it's probably, maybe it's not that, you succumb to that. And then you go, well, maybe I can't trust my feelings either. I can't trust what I see. I can't trust my feelings because my feelings are wrong. What about what I think? Can I trust what I think? So you start to tell the addict or alcoholic some things that you think. I think you have a drinking problem. And the addict or alcoholic looks at you and goes, well, I don't think I do have a drinking problem. I think that my drinking is controlled. I only drink on the weekends. I go to work every single day. I manage our family. I provide for you. I mean, if I had a drinking problem, how would I be able to be giving you this life? if I had a drinking problem, how would I be able to be providing so well for my family and taking care of my business and doing everything? And then you go, well, maybe my thinking's off. Because an alcoholic, yeah, maybe if he really did have a drinking problem, he wouldn't be able to do all these things. He wouldn't be able to, you know, keep it all together. So maybe he's not an alcoholic. Maybe he doesn't have a drinking problem. But here's what I want you to know. You got to know, like, drinking problems come in all shapes and sizes, you know, whether it's just on the weekends. I had an intervention recently where I never talk about names or give it away ever. But this is a common theme in my intervention. So sometimes I want to tell you what comes up. When I'm working with a client, many times they do not have the courage or the confidence because they're scared shitless to actually say the things they need to say. So I meet with the client. I get really clear on their boundaries, on what they're willing to settle for, tolerate. We look at everything. We say, is this going to work or not? If it is going to work, how's it going to work? And then we have an intervention. We have a couples crisis intervention with the addict or alcoholic. And I had one of those sessions, like many of the sessions, where the client said, well, I only drink on the weekends. I really don't see, I said, you know, do you see this to be a problem and an issue for you? And he was like, well, I only drink on the weekends and I manage this beautiful lifestyle and I don't think it's a problem. I said, well, what if it were true that your, you know, substance use disorder is where it's impacting your life negatively? It's not a question of how much you're using or how often you're using. It's, is your life impacted negatively? No, look at all this life I have. Look at all this things we've acquired. Look at all of the things that we've built, you know, of course it's not affecting anything. And there's a whole group of people that thinks that as long as you're successful and as long as you're looking good on paper, that there's really not an issue. But you know that all of the issue, it shows up inside of your relationship, and you and the family, you and the kids as the partner and the kids are the ones that are being affected and suffering. So sometimes getting that person to see, well, good, okay, you're still making money, but you have broken hearts. You have a full bank, but broken hearts. Like, what do you... You know, you save your substance use disorder for your family and you hold it together at work. Do you want a prize? Do you want an award? Do you want a parade because you're making money while you're hurting everybody in your life? I mean, I don't understand. Another time I had a consult, a strategic intervention, and it was like, well, I only ever do it once every couple of weeks. You know, I don't do it all the time. This is very common for people that have cocaine addiction or sex addiction. And usually those two things I find in my experience kind of go hand in hand. It's like hard to tell if it's the chicken or the egg, you know, in a situation like that. One fuels the other and the other fuels the other. But he was like, you know, it's just every month or so, you know, I just go off the rails and disappear and do something, you know. And I said, well, what if I looked at you and we were in a relationship and I stabbed you, but I only ever did it once a month. You know, I just stabbed you once a month. So I'm thinking, you know, as the stabber, I'm unconscious. How am I able to do that in the first place? Because I have no understanding or insight or empathy. And I stab you one time, and then I expect you to be okay with that because I only stab you once a month. But let's think about that for a minute. Even if you have somebody in your life who's going off the rails every single month, and the rest of the time they're great, what kind of a wound does that leave behind in you when they stab you that one time a month? You know, metaphorically, of course, we're talking, right? But emotionally, they hurt you. Psychologically, they hurt you. Financially, that's a big one because hundreds of thousands of dollars can go missing in that kind of a scenario, right? And so now you're thinking to yourself, well, yeah, wait a minute. It's only once a month, but the depth of that wound never quite heals. It never quite has a chance to mend because I'm always waiting and I'm on the lookout for the next incident. So how can you make progress in your relationship? How can that person with that substance use disorder or behavioral addiction expect you to just get over it because it doesn't happen that often? You know, there are lots of things in our lives that only happen once that leave a freaking mark, right? So when somebody's addicted, because they think they can control it and only do it here and there and maintain and then go off the rails, that's just their style. That doesn't mean anything about how well they're doing or how addicted they are. It just means they're a periodic episodic user, not an everyday. But there's It's a spectrum. Substance use disorder is a spectrum of severity, a spectrum. So let's think about it. Okay, well, you only drained the bank account, left the family for 2 days in a hotel. Nobody knew where you were. Okay, that you just abandoned the family. You went into a hotel. Nobody knew where you were. We were scared shitless, but you only ever did that like once in the last 3 months. But in the meantime, you don't know if they're dead or alive. The kids are like, where's dad? You have no idea what's happening. Money's being drained. I mean, that's a trauma for you. So it is what you think. But when an addict or an alcoholic tells you, well, it's not that bad because, and you didn't look at this, or here's another one. Okay. Our relationship, you might say, this is all in like under this blanket of you can trust your judgment. And I'm just going to tell you some of the things that are said that you're talked out of and you believe. You can't believe what you think. They tell you, don't believe what you think. Don't believe what you feel. What you feel isn't right. What you think isn't right. What you see isn't what you see. All of the above. And then there's this other kind of gaslight where you know that addiction is impacting your relationship. You're looking at this person who is addicted, who, when they're reckless and careless, they're not providing what you signed up for, right? They're not bringing safety and love and consistency and accountability and mutual respect and understanding and communication. They're not bringing all those things to relationship. And for most people, and this is women and men, we need those things to be firing on all cylinders to feel like we want to be intimate with somebody, like we want to have sex with them. You know, mostly women, we don't walk around just like fired up all the time, unless there's a whole nother, sometimes people do, but most of us require an emotional connection, a psychological connection, sapiosexual, you know, we're firing on all cylinders. You know, we have this connection, and then the intimacy, the attraction grows out of that. But if you're looking at somebody and you're sitting across the dinner table and they're drunk, and they're falling asleep in their soup, or you're ushering the children off to bed so that they don't have to, because he's going to be home any minute. And so you're ushering the kids off to bed because you don't know what to expect when they're going to walk in the door, and they come in the door and they're sloppy, or they're falling over, or you have a wife and she's on the couch with the kids and she's all right, she's like, you know, doing whatever, half asleep. And the kids are like, mommy. And you're like looking at her and you're going, what the fuck? And then this person, when you confront them about their addiction and you're like, look, this is affecting me. This is affecting our family. I think your addiction, you have a drinking problem. I feel like this relationship is going off the rails. Okay. And I see that this is an issue for you. And they start to do the thing. Well, you don't see what you see. You don't feel what you feel. You shouldn't think what you think. One of their tactics is they'll go, well, if you were intimate with me and were fulfilling my needs, then I wouldn't be in this situation. Let's talk about that. Do you want to talk about how you haven't had sex with me for months or years or weeks or days or whatever it is that their thing is? Well, of course I'm going to act out. I mean, do you think that I can just go on and just provide, just do this and not have you meet my needs and not have me want to get my needs met somehow? And all of a sudden, you know what you know, you think what you think, you feel what you feel, but what happens in that moment? You go, yes, I have not had sex with this person for a while. In fact, the last time I had sex with this person, I didn't want to, but I did it because I thought it would make things a little bit better, but it didn't. So at the end of the day, what you're going to have to understand is, of course, you don't want to have sex with this person. Of course, you do not want to be intimate with this person who is hurting you and your family on a regular basis. But it's confusing for them sometimes. And we're going to talk about that in another video, self-betrayal. Okay. It's going to be called self-betrayal, addiction and relationships. Look for that video about how you talk yourself into it and then you feel regretful after. So when somebody says to you, your partner, you don't feel what you feel. Well, you just shouldn't feel that way. I want you to stop. I want you to take a deep breath. I want you to go in for four, hold for four at the top, and breathe out for four. And you might look like strange to them. They're like, they might be looking at you like, holy shit, is a demon going to pop out? What's this person doing? Are they on the brink? But I want you to do that four times. The reason being is because when somebody says that to you in the moment, well, you shouldn't feel that way. Why do you feel that way? How do you think I feel? You haven't done that, you know, starts to do the thing. I want you to breathe, because what happens is, as soon as they trigger you up, you go back into this reptilian part of your brain, which is fight. Well, I'm just going to get in there with you. Flight. Let me take off and get out of here. Okay, freeze. You don't know what the hell to say. You're like, oh my God, deer caught in the headlights. Or fawn, which is codependency. Just please them, just shut them up, make it go away. Just kind of, you know. And so instead, when you take those four deep breaths, in for four, pause for four, out for four times, this cognitive part of your brain comes back online. Your neocortex has time to like recalibrate. Okay, good. Now I got this frontal lobe back, because I'm not back here in the freeze, you know, in the reptilian response, the fight or flight mechanism. So now I can respond. And the correct response to that is just one thing only. I think what I think, and I feel what I feel, and it's right. I think what I think, and it's right. I feel what I feel, and I'm allowed. I think what I think, and it's my truth. I feel what I feel, and I'm allowed to feel whatever I feel, no matter how you feel about it. That's a lot of feelings. Okay. So what if that were true? What if you actually were allowed to think what you think and feel what you feel? You know, you get into these relationships and you feel like you have to constantly prove yourself. You assert a thought. Well, I think that you have substance use disorder. They disagree and they do the gaslight and they do the whole thing, talk you out of what you're seeing. And then you go, well, I better prove it then. I better get into my proving mode. And so you start taking notes in your phone about everything that they're doing. You start writing down their behavior, measuring the bottles, videotaping their behavior, doing all the things, because you go with proof. But isn't this nuts? What happens when you go to them with the proof? I mean, what happens when you go to them with the proof? They deny the proof. It's so effing crazy. Is it not? Is that not nuts? And then you go, well, they need more proof. I'll do more proving, you know? Or, hey, I feel hurt by you in this marriage because you're unpredictable, you're unsafe, you're ignoring us. Even if they're not an angry alcoholic, if they're just like a absent alcoholic, they go to the garage and disappear and it's all on you. And you feel like you're alone. You're alone and you have nobody, or they come to bed smelling like alcohol and want to make love to you or have sex with you, and you're like totally disgusted and turned off, and you don't feel like it. And you're like, oh, I feel disgusted. And then they start going, well, you shouldn't feel what you feel. You go, well, let me prove that it's okay for me to feel what I feel. And then you get into an argument. Well, you did this. Why do you think I want to have sex with you? Well, you act like this. You want to prove it. You want to prove it. You want to prove it. What if you had nothing to prove and you could trust your judgment? You would just look at them and say, I'm not feeling that. No. And I don't owe you an explanation, because the mounting evidence, the mountain you want me to climb, so get to the top and go, I'm justified. You're right. You're right, Susan. You're right, Linda. I'm hurting you. You're right, Renee. You're right. Okay. The alcoholic or substance use disorder. You're right, Tom. You're right, Todd. You're right, Billy. Okay. We want all these things. But the reality is, when you show all the evidence of this is how you're hurting me, this is how you're hurting me, this is how you're hurting me, and they still don't see it, you're left in this endless loop of, well, maybe I shouldn't feel the way I feel. Maybe I'm the problem. Maybe I'm too harsh. Maybe I'm too cold. And all the things they tell you to manipulate you, you start to believe. Stop. You are justified in feeling how you feel. You can feel what you feel. You can think what you think, and you know what you know. Now, this didn't probably start in this relationship. If you are in this dynamic, this is probably not the first time you felt these feelings of not being able to trust your own judgment or feeling your own thoughts. Many of the people that I work with grew up with narcissistic parents, or addicted parents, or an alcoholic home, or something off the rails, gambling addiction, sex addiction, something happening where you as a kid were like, well, this relationship looks terrible. They shouldn't be together. But then you see them staying and fighting and working it out. And you're like, well, maybe that's how relationships go. maybe I shouldn't trust my judgment. Well, he really shouldn't treat her that way, but she tolerates that treatment. So maybe I'm wrong. Maybe she should tolerate that treatment. Maybe she deserves it. And while you're busy doing this behavior in your own dynamic today as an adult, and if you have children, that's what you're teaching them. Now, I love you, and I know that's hard to hear. But the truth is, we learn to question our judgment from looking at things that are dysfunctional and nuts and crazy and pretending they're not dysfunctional, nuts, or crazy. You've got to stop pretending that. You're allowed to feel what you feel. You can think what you think. What you think is right, what you feel is right, what you know is right. Now, if you want to really suss it out, okay, and figure it out step by step, I created that stay or go course for you. It's over at HeidiRain.com. So go grab it. It's reasonable. It's not $1 million for the course. It's affordable, I think, from my perspective, because I think that the investment in you is priceless, but I still tried to keep it so that everybody could get it if they want it, right? So I want you to go over there, look at the course. I'll put the link in the description of this video for you, or just go to HeidiRain.com and look for it. It's right there. Okay. So in the meantime, I want you to walk through the week thinking to yourself, I feel what I feel. I know what I know. I see what I see. I'm allowed to think what I think. I'm allowed to feel what I feel. I'm allowed to see what I see. I'm allowed to know what I know. And whenever somebody's confronting you and triggering you, and you want to take those four breaths, why don't you make that a meditation? Breathe in for four. I feel what I feel. Hold it, meditating on the thing. I'm allowed to feel what I feel. Release. I'm allowed to feel what I feel. I'm allowed to, because your brain needs retraining. And that requires a behavior modification on your part, right? So start with that. That's crucial. And again, if you want more help, go to HeidiRain.com and go ahead and grab that course. But I hope this help has been taught this I hope this talk has been helpful for you. Because I know it was helpful for me. There are so many years that I spent questioning my own judgment, thinking that I was the crazy one. And it takes a minute to undo that damage. And that damage is usually caused, like we said, by the dysfunctional relationships, origin relationships, or even this one. It can have started here as well. But no matter where it started or where it began, the groove is still pretty deep, no matter how long it's been going on. So it's going to take a minute. Okay. I love you. Take excellent care of yourself. And remember, at the end of the day, you have nothing to prove. All right. I believe in this so much that I made this logo. I'm holding this up. If you're listening to the podcast, you can't see it, but I made a new logo with my name with a sword through it because we want to cut the bullshit. And nothing to prove is the tagline because at the end of the day, you don't have anything to prove. You feel what you feel, you know what you know, you see what you see, and it's all right. All right. I love you. Take excellent care. I'll see you very soon. Bye-bye.